In a world of uncertainty and despair,
you've been canceled.
Two heroes have reunited when they're needed the most.
Doing it for the money.
Live from the Pals for Life studios, it's the S&M Show. Here are your hosts, Shane Ryan and Mike Bowers.
It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood yet again. Welcome to the S&M Show. My name is Mike Bowers. As always, Shane Ryan is with me. How are you this week, my friend?
I'm doing good, man. Took a day off tomorrow. Got to burn some of those days they didn't let us carry over for COVID again this year. So I got a few more left to burn. So I'm taking a day off tomorrow, playing in a golf tournament with a bum shoulder. So that should be fun.
But, oh, geez. Well, the good news is you have a built-in excuse.
Right, right. So we're and you know, I can drink a little bit to hopefully like numb the pain, and we'll see.
There you go.
We'll see. I might have to become a putting and chipping specialist.
There you go. That should do it.
But still better than working. Still better than working. How are you holding up, dude?
I'm good. I'm actually this is the last week of classes for us. So summer term kicks off next week. And I actually drop down to part time for the next month and a half because I have so much vacation to burn through.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean we did furloughs this year, so that was 12 days over the course of the year, and it's, you know, there's only so much vacation you can take right now, or so much time off you can take, so I was like, I got 140 hours to use by August, I'm going to use them, and I am fortunate that I have a boss that is supportive enough to let me do that, so I'm excited. I'm going to catch up on some things that I have not been able to do for a while, and may actually spend some time working on this stuff, too, we'll see.
That's awesome, man. You guys have to use them by August?
It's by our anniversary date, so I started in August.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
August 16th is the date.
Oh, wow. Yeah, for us, they do it by the business fiscal or the college fiscal year. So like we have to do everything by June 30th. So like
yeah,
during COVID, I took a bunch of days off for like house renovations to help like the handyman that was doing the work, who's our neighbor who did excellent work. Shout out the Modern Handyman for those of you listening in Rochester. Steph didn't take any days, so she's taking like tomorrow off and then all of next week. So she's got a bunch to burn because they told us for our mental health, we will not let you, it's good for you to take days. So because of that, we're not going to allow you to carry over any because of this COVID stuff.
I mean, I guess if they're forcing you to do it, that's good. If it was a situation where it's like, you can't carry over your time, but also you can't take time right now.
Right.
Like that would be pretty crappy. So glad you guys are getting time to actually work on that. So
yeah,
and I'm sure the little one will appreciate it too.
Yeah. So it's not too bad. So she's going to spend a bunch of time with mom next week, which would be nice. And then like you know, we get the main renovation we did is her playroom. So she's going to be super pumped. She keeps like inviting all of her classmates over, and her teachers also being like, they're going to come over for a sleepover, and I'm like, that's going to be awkward, but whatever.
Very cool. So, well, that the next couple weeks are going to be fun, it sounds like, but let's get caught up on the week that has already been. So, I hear that a Space Jam 2 trailer came out.
So, yes. So, actually, shout out to Elements of Madness, but did see it on his Doug Davidson's post that there was a trailer, too, that got dropped. And so, did you have a chance to watch it?
I have not, no.
So it looks okay. I mean, it's this generation's version of Space Jam. Say what you will about remakes or like spinning off of legacies. I thought that movie was awesome and it was amazing. I mean, I guess we probably all should have heard it coming with all the MJ and LeBron comparisons. Like, we all should have figured that this might happen at some point. I have a hard time removing my biases to LeBron James, so it's going to be hard for me to view it as a completely objective movie trailer, what it's going to be. I won't go to the theater to support it. I may either pirate it or watch it. You know, we'll see what it is. I don't want to totally keep adding to LeBron's thing, but we'll see how it goes. I did see that the Monstars list was kind of released. So I saw that they're going to have Anthony Davis be in that, which, you know, you probably saw that coming. Dame Lillard is going to be in it, which is an interesting one. But, you know, I like Dame and the things he's doing out in your area or near your area. Klay Thompson is going to be in it. And then I like what they did, you know, being it's 2021, WNBA is a thing now, having Diana Taurasi and Nunika Ogunwe, I probably murdered that name, but are both going to be in it from the WNBA, so, or WNBA, so that'll be kind of cool. But it's hard to not look at Diana Taurasi's number or name and not think of that WNBA live YouTube clip from when we were in college. but it's going to be interesting. I don't know. I can't be objective. I'm not a LeBron fan. Do you think he takes, like, you know, what is it, the during the game, does he take, like, the time off? You know, like, what is it, player load management?
I suspect that the Monstars are going to play dirty at some point and poke him in the eye. And then for the next 30 minutes of game action, he's going to be, like, holding his eye and, like, making it clear that he's in pain.
And talking to the ref.
Yeah, look how great I am overcoming this. It's interesting that the players are the Monstars this time, because in the MJ version, wasn't it that they had other players, but they, like, their skills got taken away or something like that?
So the Monstars took the aliens took, like, the skill away from all the players. So that's how that I think it worked out from that perspective, is that they took the skills and then they became these, like, super aliens because they were those little slug creatures. This one, I'm trying to understand the storyline. I think it's more of, like, this AI world captures his son, and then these are, like, AI. So they're not really Monstars. Like, I don't think they're calling them Monstars, but these are, like, AI creatures they created to play for his son's freedom and, like, the future of the Looney Tune race. So that's kind of, like, they're going to all be erased if they lose is what I got from it. We'll see. I mean, I'll tune in. My kid likes it. That'll be, you know, is what it is. I'll have to do a little education on what the real thing was. But, I mean, it all comes down to I'm just not a LeBron fan. So I'm going to find every way to make any joke possible. Like, I hope he walks out to the game reading The Godfather like he does when he goes out. And, like, has him Instagram with wine, you know, instead of Michael's special sauce. It's, like, vino.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all these, like, totally forced, ridiculous things that he does. Look at me, I'm so cool. Like, that's the thing I loved about Michael. Is, like, everyone knew the guy was a stone cold killer. Like, LeBron James has to remind everybody that he's all this stuff, and it just, that's what I hate about it, is that it's forced and mainly pushed by him.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good, but it's like he doesn't need to remind us how good he is, or he doesn't need, more so, he doesn't need to create this perceived adversity that he overcomes. Like, he's incredible without it. So,
right.
You know, it's
just, I be awesome, man.
Yeah.
Like, don't write letters to your future self. Like, don't do all this, like, or your past self. Like, hey, young king, if I would have known you would have been this today. Like, it's just such.
Yeah. Anywho. So there's that. I will probably watch it when it's on a, when it's able to be viewed on a flight back home or something like that, when it's out on video. I have no intention of going to the theaters for it. I'm waiting for Fast 9 for that, which I think is next week. So I'll be checking that out at some point, but yeah, we'll see. Other things going on this week. OnlyFans has announced that they are planning to pivot away from porn in an effort to seek a $1 billion valuation and investment.
Bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it pans out for you. I mean, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, I get it. I mean, for those of you not familiar with OnlyFans, you check it out, you do it, you realize it's majority of it is porn stars promoting their platform, or semi-celebrities trying to offset and sell salacious photos or partially nude photos. Like, that's literally how it started, not with that intention. Like, it started out as a way to connect with your fans and audiences, but then, like a lot of internet social media thing does without any restrictions, it slowly gets taken over by others who use different liberties to do so. And came saturated with porn stars, and I think that's what brought it to a lot of notoriety. hilarious when celebrities join on and people automatically assume it's because they're going to get naked. So they get huge, huge spikes. But it's going to be interesting. I get it that they're trying to sell to newer, older investors and money, newer generations a little bit more free. They're trying to get that $1 billion valuation. I just don't know how that's going to be a long-term strategy for them, because I feel like they've been so successful at this point because they haven't restricted who can use it.
Yeah, I think it'll be similar to Tumblr, I think, where they pivoted away from porn and there was just a big downturn as far as interest and whatnot. I think OnlyFans is still going to get that $1 billion valuation because you can always find a sucker to invest money in these sorts of things. But I suspect that once they've gotten that they'll pivot back to, they'll go back to playing the hits, let's say.
Well, it's going to be tough. Like, it's going to be tough. I mean, that's what brought you to this notoriety. So it's hard to like peel back the curtain while you can. And if it's not this, those celebrities who are using that platform for this are going to go find the next big thing. So it's like,
right,
you know, the next big thing's like sweet and they're hoping it's them. But for the same token, like, that's what happens. Like, you know, Twitter tried to tone down some of the stuff, got some backlash, people jumped off. Like, it's just, I get why they're doing it, but at the same time, it's like, people want freedom, people want to express themselves and how they want to do it, and the sex industry, whether people like it or not, makes a ton of money, and it's very profitable, and it's recession-proof, and, you know, it's interesting. So it's an interesting move. Like I said, I get it from selling it to a family-friendly and making it a little bit more wholesome, but and maybe that wasn't the intention for it, but sometimes you got to play the hand that you're dealt, and you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, pretty much. The other news of the week. Apparently, NBC was working on an ultimate slip and slide show. And due to a certain parasite that was introduced that was found in the water there, they now have a widespread issue of explosive diarrhea, causing the filming to be paused. Now, obviously, I know it's a matter of, like, they're very sick and they can't compete or work or whatever, but I just have this vision in my head of like just diarrhea coming down the slip and slide and just being absurdly ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's just like there's like the two, like the grossest things that like coming together, like, right? Like slip and slide, water parks, so much joy. But like, you're always thinking like, what's in that water? Now, like, you kind of know what's in that water and it's EAD. So it's like, I don't know. I would just be worried that, you know, like I lose my bodily function control and then I'm sliding in someone else's slip and slide. So it's a little bit of a compounding issue. So I wish them the best, but I would take a few weeks off to make sure that that's all sorted out before I would join in on this.
Exactly. So last story, you sent me something earlier. It's funny because it's kind of work related. It looked like it was somebody from your institution.
Yeah. So that's how it came through. So there was an article in The Conversation today that one of the researchers at RIT was talking about, where there's a concept now that for vaccines, people are suggesting that there's a school of thought that maybe you should mix up your vaccines. So like if you got Pfizer for number one, do Moderna for your shot number two and vice versa, just to allow for better protection against strains and combining it. So I believe I sent you the note, give me all the vaccines. But it's an interesting thought, and you know, we'll be interested to see what happens, and maybe it'll hope for better collaboration between these companies, more access to vaccines, better boosters. Who knows? But it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. But it's a real interesting concept that, you know, like, hey, should we mix these up to give a little bit better protection for all? So really interested to see how that kind of plays out. And it looks like there's some research and some thought leaders, your favorite term in the world, but thought leaders that are championing this movement. So I'll be really interested to see what happens when we move forward, if this is something that comes into common practice or people elect to do if they have that option.
Do we want to talk about the tournament?
Probably should get into it. That's probably going to take a good portion of our show. I mean, we've been running lately.
Yeah, I suspect that's why people are here. So we wrapped up the first round this week with our Greatest Boy Band Song Tournament with the Gary, Indiana region. So let me pull up the results here that just closed, and we will get into it. So number one seed, I Want You Back by the Jackson 5, won pretty handily over Menudo's Hold Me, 92% of the vote. 8-9 matchup, I'll Make Love to You, the 9 seed, takes it very handily over All for Love. Apologies to Shane, apologies to Kenny, and anybody else who voted for Color Me Bad. But I'll Make Love to You.
That one hit me hard.
Yeah, I'll Make Love to You took 86% of the vote. So sadly, it was not close. Apologies, Brian Abrams. You still have I Want to Sex You Up in the tournament. Hopefully, we can get you on.
Let's talk about this. We'll break it down.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get his firsthand feedback and analysis on this. Hanging the Tough versus Larger Than Life. Larger Than Life ekes out a victory with 54% of the vote. They will face in the next round themselves, because Quit Playing Games With My Heart took 84% of the vote over If It Isn't Love. Moving down, 6-11 matchup, I Want You Back by NSYNC as the 11 seed beat Liquid Dreams pretty easily, 72% of the vote. The matchup that got people scared for a bit, I think it's the 4-13, the 3-14, I Swear, ends up pulling about 67% of the vote over Back Here by BB Mac. There was some concern when the polls first came out that Back Here was going to pull this out, but like I said at the time, it's like when that 16 seed scores the first couple baskets against the 1 seed, you know it's eventually going to happen 99% of the time. You're just waiting for it to happen. And
I was hoping for chaos.
I was too.
I may have fueled it with one of my votes.
I mean, I'm a big fan of BB Mac, and I've been listening to that album all week, but I Swear rightfully probably won out here. Summer Girls are one of our Rushmore songs, won easily over Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers' Why Do Fools Fall in Love. Summer Girls taking 75.7% of the vote. And to round out the region, Mbop wins handily over More Than That with 75.7% of the vote as well. So we are officially down to the round of 32. We have narrowed the field by half. What do you think?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think a lot of the matchups went ways I would have thought they were going to go. I think mainly with some of the brackets that we had. I think the real telling thing was who our audience is and who's actually voting. So I'm sorry for some of the newer boy bands, and I look forward to airing some future interviews where we break down and get into the different generations of the boy band genre. But it just, you know, it was unfortunate to see that happen and see that go through. So you know, I'm interested to see these next matchups. I mean, I think it really is a loaded field, and I think we are going to start seeing some marquee matchups. And there's some that have easier roads than others, and then there's some that I think are titans that if they beat each other in this round, they're going to go on quite a run. So it's going to be real neat to break this down and see what happens. Also a little bummed to see that we didn't get the sweep of 2 versus 15s knocking off 2s, but...
Yeah,
Mbop should move on.
Props to Mbop for finally breaking the 2-15 curse. They actually won a matchup that that all the 2s should have won from the start. So kind of amazing that out of the 4 2-15 matchups, only 1 2 seed advanced. So we'll see if those other 15 seeds can wreak some havoc. So we are through the Orlando region for the second round. You know what that means. It's time to cancel some things.
What does that mean? Let's do it.
All right, it's our favorite segment of the week.
It's that time for Shane and Mike to cancel things that they don't like. Cancel Corner.
Cancel Corner, where we address the supposed cancel culture in America by canceling more things. And today's episode of Cancel Culture is brought to you by Omeo. Omeo is a travel booking platform that makes planning a journey in Europe and North America effortless. Just enter your travel details and Omeo will magically give you all the train, bus, flight, and ferry options for your journey. It's never been simpler to book your first real vacation for 2021. Best of all, using Omeo saves you time and money, which is a win-win in our books. Omeo wants to help you leave the house this summer by offering 5% off your next booking. Just head to omio.com. That's omio.com and use the code LISTENER5 at checkout. Valid until June 30th for new users on all modes of transportation. It's just the pick me up 2021 needs. Omio. Plan, book, and love the journey. Terms and conditions apply.
Omio, more like Omio. All right.
Yeah, that's right. All right, who do you got first up this week?
All right, so going with my shopping theme the last 2 weeks, I am canceling Facebook Marketplace. I'm canceling Facebook Marketplace for a few reasons. I actually do really enjoy it, but I do have a few frustrations. One is the most recent upgrade where you search for something and it's like shipping and local. The only reason I am using Facebook Marketplace is because it's like a more legit version of Craigslist. Like, you can actually maybe stalk somebody to make sure that they're not a total creeper before buying. So I have no desire to like get something shipped to me off of Facebook with like no guarantee that some creeper is going to totally scam me. Like, I have Etsy for that. So that's the one reason why I'm getting, one of the first reason why I'm canceling it. The first reason leads into my second reason. Creeper is on this. Like, it's a huge place for scams. It's a huge place for people just kind of double posting something. And then I hate this new culture where people buy something super cheap and then try to sell it then later for like double the price a couple hours later. So for like early on in the pandemic, I was looking for like a weight bench, and it just like, I would get beaten out by these people, and then I'd see the same exact weight bench on sale an hour later for like triple the price. So it was just ridiculous. Which then also leads into the third point that I have with it, is the lack of integrity by these shady ass vendors. And I know that like it's a free market and you are free to do whatever you want, but if you're messaging with somebody and they're like, hey, I will hold this for you tomorrow because I can't come at like 11 o'clock at night because we were doing an awesome interview with Maria Sherman to go pick up this super cheap tent. I expect you to possibly hold that for me tomorrow so that when I message you after the show, you could then be like, and say, hey, what time should I pick this up tomorrow? I should get a response. I didn't. Then I then said, hey, the next morning, hey, still interested? When can I come grab this awesome tent? Still no answer. Then I did it again that night saying, hey, I'm free after work. Happy to come over anytime that you want that night. Still no answer. And then it got marked sold and I rated them with 1 star. So that is my reason that I have a problem with Facebook Marketplace. One, the now putting the shipping in local. Just all I care about is the local things to buy from non-creepy people who I can trust. Is that too much to ask?
You've been canceled.
Ironically, I've only ever bought two things through Facebook Marketplace, and it was stuff I had shipped.
You asshole.
I did, when I moved from Spokane to here, I did sell my bed through Marketplace, and I just had the shadiest person keep trying to buy the mattress. Like, I think it was 4 or 5 different days where it's okay, I'm going to be there in 1 hour, 2 hours, whatever. And then they would just disappear and be like, hello, do you still want it? I'm holding it for you. And then they reappear the next day. And it's like, I'm so sorry, I couldn't get a ride, but I'm on the way now. And then they wouldn't show up. And finally, this other dude swoops in. He was like, I got $100 and I can be there today. And I was like, okay, if you get here today, it's yours. And sure enough, he showed up. I don't even think I ever heard from that other lady again, but never again.
I got too much integrity for it.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to cancel Bicyclist this week.
Okay. Ooh, they are a mean bunch, my friend. So I hope this gets some traction. This could get us some hate mail.
I know. And it'll probably be like, well, you look like you could ride a bicycle there, fatty. I know. But as the weather gets warmer again, and as people start to venture out, a lot of bicyclists, most of them are fine. You know, they respect the rules of the road. I know that's a big thing. Like, share the road, respect the rules of the road. We're on the same thing here. So most of the cyclists are good. But it's that 10% of bicyclists who, on one hand, they have those share the road bumper stickers, and then they don't do any of the rules of the road. Like, they want to be on the road when it's convenient, but then when you have a red light or a stop sign, they just burn right through it because, oh, I'm a cyclist, it doesn't count. Or I'm trying to think of what else. Like, pop up on the sidewalk and almost mow down some pedestrians. It's like, you know, I want to be whatever I want to be when it's convenient. But, yeah, especially around here, if there's a bike lane, it's fine. Like, okay, you know, stay in the lane. We'll watch out for you. You watch out for us. We're good. But especially in Seattle, where there's so many traffic jams, you have that, like, those one or two cyclists that they're just plugging along. And they're just, you know, splitting lanes, and it just causes traffic to back up more and more. And it's like, you're either on the road or you're not. You can't have the best of both worlds. But so many people around here just seem to suck at it. So until we get some better cycle culture here, bicyclists, I'm sorry, but you've been canceled.
You've been canceled.
It's definitely a city thing, because, like, I cycle a little bit, and I luckily I have trails by us, so I don't have to do much of the road stuff. But
right.
Did I ever tell you about the issue Steph and I had when we first moved down to DC when she was driving me to the metro station?
No.
So real quick aside, first like month that we were in DC. I live 30 minutes away from the metro station, so I had to go, when I first started going working in DC, I had to go metro, bus, or bus, metro, bus. But Steph had to go in one day. I was running late. She decided to drop me off at the metro station on her way to work. So we were going, they were doing road maintenance, and DC bicyclists is a very popular thing,
right.
But it's just, traffic in DC is very interesting, and then, like, there's certain parts of the roads that are one way one part of the day, like, there's no real lanes, like, it's a mess. I was too nervous to ever ride my bike in DC that wasn't on a trail, so I just didn't. But this guy was trying to pass all this traffic, and there's road work, and he tried to pass Steph, and Steph was staying in her lane, but the road work was on the bike lane, and he tried to pass Steph, came close to the car, realized he was close to the car, overcorrected, and then crashed into, like, a telephone pole.
No.
So, never made contact with Steph's car. So, we were like, oh, crap. Steph was freaking out. So, we're like, what do we do? I'm like, just pull over. So, we pulled over, and we both ran over. We're like, man, are you okay? The dude got up and started getting in Steph's face and then criticizing her driving. Like, I was a bit going to be over there like, hey, are you okay? Can I help you or anything? And then, right. Like, the minute he started criticizing Steph, I went completely different.
Flipped
different
that switch.
Tone.
Yeah.
Right. And my stone flipped. Like, you don't attack her because she did nothing wrong. So I got in the guy's face. Luckily, I took pictures of everything. Like, he tried to pass us in a construction zone. The road was there, whatever. He somehow found out our address, wrote us a letter, complained to the insurance company trying to make a claim for his, like, damages, and he wrote us a letter saying that he had to go to the hospital later that day, wanted to get credit for his bills, jeez, had a possible concussion. Like, the guy didn't hit it that hard, but, like, it was just, the guy went over the top. And so unfortunately, Steph is too good of a person. And I coached her on how to talk to the insurance company. Like, you did nothing wrong. I sent all the documentation. I didn't want her deductible to go up. It was all in both of our names.
Right.
So I was sending her everything. Like, I had all this, everything documented. And she made one comment in the thing where she's like, my car might have, like, the way she phrased it was like, I told her, you were in the lane, you did nothing wrong, don't say that. I might have affected his path.
Mm.
And they caught on that, and they gave the guy his settlement. And then our insurance premiums went up. And I'm like, no! I had this lock-tight case to not have it happen. But, yeah, that was our interaction with cyclists. So, yeah, city cyclists are a different animal, my friend.
It really is, because it's like, you have, when you don't have a bike lane, you have this cyclist that, like, obviously they can't go as fast as a car, which is perfectly reasonable. So, you know, you're slowed down because of the cyclist. Eventually you're able to get around the cyclist, and then you get to a stoplight, and then the cyclist passes everybody again and causes the same traffic jam again. And it's like, again, you're either treated like a car or you're not. You can't say, oh, well, you need to treat me like a car now, except when it's inconvenient, and then I'm going to hop up on a sidewalk or drive around all of you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a can't have your cake and eat it too situation, but it's like, oh, woe is me.
Exactly.
They're like the LeBron of transportations.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right, what's your next one?
With the theme of Father's Day coming around, I have to cancel number one dad stuff. The Ooh. Reason I'm canceling number one dad stuff is a couple of reasons. One, it's super subjective. Like you are, like, if that person is your dad that's there, like, it is, he hopefully is your number one dad, right?
Right.
But again, there could be other family situations and dynamics, which, you know, we can go into even is Father's Day inclusive enough, because I, you know, it might not be for today's standards. But at the same time, it's super subjective. Like, you don't have anything to compare it to. So that dad should be the number one dad in your life. But the problem I have with it is that it dilutes the pool for us who are truly number one dads. So, like, it saturates the market. Like, you know, like, I can comfortably and confidently say I'm possibly in the top 10% of dads. I don't think I'm the not a top five. I don't think that's too much. But I think the way I check in with my daughter, the things I do with her, I think she will agree. I'm in there. So I'm not saying I'm number one. I could be in contention for that. But, you know, there's a bunch of scrubs and other people that I could see in my life and people I interact with that do not have nearly as good of a relationship with their kids. And they're getting number one dad stuff just like I am. So I think there should be some criteria set. I think there's a problem that's there. Plus, I don't think it's super inclusive because, hey, if we want to go on a complete other aside, I may be a number one dad, but the people who should be celebrated are single moms, because those freaking people are superheroes, my friend.
Absolutely.
So it's a whole messed up dynamic that's there. So I am canceling number one dad stuff solely because I don't think people can hold a candle to my dadhood, and I don't want you celebrating it because you can.
You've been canceled.
Hold on. I think I have something just for this occasion. If Kenny is listening, he will appreciate this reference, but there's a song that just reminded me, or that I was just reminded of hearing you talk there.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches and crime allowances, finessing on them with some counterfeits, but now I'm counting.
All right, yeah. Very humble there, but... I kind of want to treat it whenever I see the number one dad stuff. I'm assuming you've seen Elf, right?
Yeah.
I kind of want to treat it like that when Will Ferrell walks into the coffee shop with the world's best coffee or whatever. He's like, congratulations, you did it. I kind of want to do that every time I see a number one dad shirt. Like, way to go, you did it. That's good for you. And see what happens.
I get it. It's cute, but, like, it's a little over the top. There can't be that many number one dads. You are saturating the market, and most of y'all who are wearing it do not deserve that distinction.
Also, same-sex couples, do they get number one dad shirts? Does one get a number two dad?
There's so many different things, but, I mean, the thing that really drives me nuts is, like, literally single moms or single parents. Or if there are single dads, because there are single dads out there who are taking full custody of their kids and responsibility, those are truly number one dads, because that sounds like a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard enough for me and my wife to do it with limited support with what we got in the area that we are, for the two of us to split it, let alone having to do all that by yourself.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Totally not inclusive either, but, you know, it is what it is. I get the sentiment. It's nice. It's nice to have a day that you're, you know, celebrated for what you do, but not all of you have earned that right.
Yeah, exactly. So that was Cancel Corner for this week, brought to you by Omeo. So we're going to, since we're halfway through our songs for this week, we're going to dive into the part one of the interview with Richie Neville from Five. I would say, and Shane... tell me if you agree with this, but prior to our interview with Maria Sherman this week, which we're going to air later on in the tournament, this is probably our favorite interview.
We've been lucky, right? So yeah. it's two part, right? We're starting to get our flow in interviewing folks and understanding, and, like, you know, we're learning again. We're kicking off, we're dusting off the dust of our back in our journalism days. But, I mean, just I've been really impressed every interview that we've had, that, like, not only are we getting better, but it just seems like our guests are also, like, more open. And maybe it's because they're taking us seriously or not. But, I mean, it was a lot of fun. We went in a bunch of different directions. He was a lot more of an open book than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
He was cool with me using Wikipedia to ask him a question and finding out that it was totally wrong. So
there is that.
Shout out to my dad who sent me like 4 sommelier questions to find out he might not be one.
Yeah, he just happened to drink a lot of wine in Australia, which we'll get into.
Someone called him a sommelier.
Yeah, that's how it works, I guess. But yeah, it was really fun, and I think we're going to learn a lot. Remember that Five, while their success in the U.S. was pretty short, pretty brief, they were huge in the U.K. For a while. Like when they announced their breakup, first of all, it was unexpectedly, and secondly, it was a big deal because they were supposedly getting ready to embark on a huge tour of the U.K. And then to come out and say, actually, we're done. I mean, that was a rough day over there.
I mean, they were the Backstreet Boys of the UK at the time. And they very well could have been like that in the US. But I mean, hearing the schedule they were on is just incredible to see how much success they had, what they did and what they put off, and how they were able to stay as active as they were, as long as they were.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get into that part one of the interview with Richie from Five. And then we'll be back to finish up the tournament. So stay tuned.
Okay, so we are here this morning / afternoon over in the UK. We're with Richie from Five, who has been so gracious to join us today. First and foremost, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's pleasure is ours as well. So let's just dive right into it. Obviously, a lot of our listeners, I think, are pretty familiar with Five, and particularly some of the bigger hits you all had. When the Lights Go Out comes to mind. But for those who may not be as familiar with the group and their backstory, can you talk a little about that? It's my understanding that there was a national audition, and you were one of the five people that were selected to the group. Can you talk to me about what that was like?
Yeah, of course. It was eye-opening because, you know, you have to cast your mind back to, what would it have been? I think it was late 96. And the Spice Girls were just the biggest thing on planet Earth. It was the world was Spice World. Right. And there was an article in the paper that said, do you want to be a Spice Boy? And I was you're in Seattle, as you told me. So like, I was a grunger. Like I was into like, you know, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and all that was my thing, and a bit of dance music. So I actually was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. They can't possibly be making a band called the Spice Boys. That's the worst idea ever. But it turned out it was actually the management team that had put the Spice Girls together, had teamed up with an unknown Simon Cowell.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to do the same thing, but with a boy band. And long story short, I decided, I'll go for the audition, see how it goes. Don't have to do it. Just feel it out and see how it goes. A few months later, cut a long story. Well, actually, no. We turn up and it's a media circus. I don't know. I think the British media are quite world renowned for being quite full on, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing, yeah. So, it was a media circus. There were cameras and Spice Girl tribute acts turning up. 3,000 guys attended. It was madness. You know, I was at school and I not even in London. You know, I wasn't even in a big city. Like a town dude rocking up to the big city, all madness. And there was 3,000 people attended. They went down to 14 guys. On another day, a few weeks later, we went down to the 14 and we were put into the five of us within a couple of hours, almost immediately. And then a little known fact is that the reason we were called Five and we decided that we were going to be called Five was that all boy bands had five people and they didn't want five people. They wanted four. But they couldn't decide who to lose. So they went, look, just do it as a five-piece.
That's awesome. Now talking about the five-piece, there was two band members named Richie, right? So how you got to keep Richie and your bandmate elected to go with the nickname Apps. Can you talk about how you all came to that decision? And is there a part of you that's still like, man, Abs is a sweet name for a dude in a boy band?
Do you know what? There was never even a conversation about it, really. I don't remember any conversation about it. I'm pretty sure he kind of went by that name anyway. His middle name is Aberdeen.
Right.
So it's shortened to Abs. I'm pretty sure he never ever he introduced himself as Abs anyway. He's got nothing to do with his like with his stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing whatsoever. It was just the name. That's how he was known. So yeah, it was never an issue. He always went by that.
That's easy enough.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah. So you already mentioned Simon Cowell being involved with the formation of the group and everything. And obviously in the year 2021, everybody around the world is familiar with Simon for his very blunt and straightforward style of giving feedback and working with people. What was it like working with him back then? How true is that persona that he portrays on TV?
Yeah, I mean, probably he ramped it up at times a little bit, but fundamentally, that is him. He was always the biggest ego in the room, that's for sure. And believe me, there were some egos in his room. Yeah. But you know what? Like, the thing is with Simon, like, I go into because I love music. It's a business to Simon. It's a way to make money, and he's a businessman. So I couldn't get my head around that for a long time. And then eventually I understood it as I got a little bit older. I kind of understood, okay, that's how, the angle he's coming from. And you know, he knows how to work a room, and he does tell you straight. Like little funny things was like, if you had an idea that you wanted to get past him, you know, it's the classic. You had to make him think that he'd had the idea. Somehow, you know, that's a great idea, Simon. Even though, you know, you sort of mentioned it 2 minutes ago, and just things like that. He was a funny person to be around, but he knows what he likes. He knows what he wants, and he usually gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So When the Lights Go Out is considered Five's debut single in the U.S., though you had released many songs previously in the U.K. What were the factors in making this debut single in the U.S., and how did it feel to achieve what was then like international fame?
Yeah, it was a mad one. I mean, from our perspective, I mean, to you guys, we're probably just this fresh band coming out with a new song. But, you know, like you say, we had a couple of releases in the UK, and we were taking off around Europe. And for a British band, you know, it's usually, you know, it would be do well in Britain and Ireland, maybe head to, you know, continental Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Asia, then America. Whereas it was a weird one because we were getting the call from just sort of pan worldwide immediately. We want you in the States. We want you in Asia. We want you. So it was hard work, man. It was mad schedules. I mean, I remember frequently waking up on a bus. You know, we were continent hopping, and it was like, you'd wake up and you, cause you're half asleep, you know, that kind of panicked moment when you wake up and you'd be like, and you sort of look out the window and you'd be looking at the signs on the road to see if it was like Asian kind of writing or whether it was in English or what. And you'd be like, okay, I'm in Asia. What country are we in? You know, so yeah, it was kind of mad. But certainly for America, it was super exciting. I'd never been to America. First time I came to America, I think we pretty much stopped Times Square on one of my first visits. It was mad. It was totally mad. And, you know, like, you know, obviously we get, well, at the time we had Ricky Lake and shows like that. And so then Beyond Them was kind of just super cool, you know, it was just super cool. And obviously, you know, we see a lot of America in the movie. So it was just cool to walk down New York. I mean, I was only 17. So it was just super, everything was just super cool. Yeah.
So, if I can follow up on that a little bit, when you're talking about the travel and everything,
yeah.
You said in an interview several years ago that, comparing how One Direction, for example, how they're traveling versus how you guys had to travel. You talked about how basically when you're doing a transcontinental flight, your sleep on the plane is basically your sleep for that day, and you hop off and you have to perform. Yeah. How much of a toll does that take on you, having to do that constantly?
Massive, man. You know, a lot of the time, you know, a lot of TVs are in the morning. You know, big TV shows can be breakfast shows. So they want you there at 4 or 5 a.m. But then shows that you're playing, gigs and whatnot, you don't finish till 11 midnight. So it doesn't take a rocket science to work out that your sleep's getting squeezed into 4 or 5 hours in the end by the time you've wound down. So off very frequently, 18 hour days. The first 2 years, I think we had one or two days off. In all honesty, we were in Japan. We've been going 2 years hard, and we were tired and we just openly had bickering on, I think it was there, like MTV. And our tour manager just called the management company and was like, look, they really need a break. Just let them have a holiday. They're just done. They need a break. And they said, okay, fine. So we just canceled everything and took 2 weeks off. I went to Thailand and just chilled out. It did massively take its toll. It was a lot to take in at a young age, a lot to take in. Anyway, you know, becoming famous, living in the UK as well with the British paparazzi everywhere you go, trying to catch you out. You know, if you do something wrong, they will find you and they will catch you. And, you know, that was a stress. And then obviously, you know, just being constantly that tired, you know what it's like. You don't have so much sleep. You're not on your A game, are you? You know, you're tired and the mood, you know, so it's just, yeah, it's hard work. Yeah,
that's insane. I travel for work, and like I've done a red eye a couple of times, and like it just wipes me out for the next 2 days. So I couldn't imagine having to be at my best all the time, going. And this is before energy drinks, right? So it's like,
yeah, you know, energy drinks, and you know, very often we would be that side. The backstage, it would be, you know, your eyes are closing, you'd have power naps, and then it'd be like, right, go, you're on now, and you'd be like. Water, off you go, like just get on there, and you know you just have to turn it on, you just have to do it, like it's just how it is, I guess. In a way actually it's a lot like being a soldier, but yeah, it's nothing like being a soldier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Five is often compared to like bands such as like Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, New Kids on the Block, and an Image. But a huge differentiator for you all is the fact that you all wrote or co-wrote most of your songs, correct?
Yeah.
So did you feel like you all got enough credit for the artistry behind your music? And then do you maybe feel like you were potentially ahead of your time, as a follow-up question?
As far as ahead of our time, and I don't want to sit here going, oh, you know, we probably weren't the best band ever to exist. I'm pretty sure, well, we definitely weren't the best band ever to exist. But I think for the genre, and what we were doing, yeah, I'd say we were certainly very different. And I don't think actually the release in the States necessarily, you got that actually. Like there was so a lot of tracks that we did were like a baby Beastie Boys, super funk elements to the pop. So yeah, you know, we were trying to mix it up. We were trying to be, you know, just not that stale ballad singing kind of thing that's the, you know what to expect every time. We wanted to just tear up the rule book a little bit and go a little bit harder at times, even though, you know, but there's a place for a ballad. Ballads are great songs, you know, they're nice, but yeah. So in a sense, yeah, I'm proud of what we did. You know, I don't sit there and analyze it, to be honest with you. It is what it is. I'm kind of at that point in my life where I find myself saying that a lot. Oh, well, it is what it is. Like, it just is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Whatever, c'est la vie.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So in that era, we know it wasn't uncommon for a song to be proposed to go to a group, and they may take it, they may pass on it, however that goes. Did you all have some songs proposed for you to perform that you ended up passing on?
Yeah.
Supposedly Bye 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 was proposed to you. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. So Max Martin, a lot of people have heard of him now. Amazing producer, amazing songwriter. He's the third most successful songwriter after Lennon and McCartney ever. And yeah, he wrote Bye Bye Bye. And yeah, like you said, you know, we had our own style, and he played it to us. He said, I really want you guys to do it. And we knew NSYNC, you know, we knew their sound, and it sounded like NSYNC. It was an NSYNC song to us. And we just said, look, Max, you know, it's such a well-crafted pop song, but it already sounds like NSYNC. It's just got them written all over it. Like, you should, you know, otherwise he'll be accused of trying to sound like NSYNC, you know. So, you know, give it to them because they'll make it a real success. And they did. So, yeah.
Any other songs that you guys ended up passing on?
Yeah. Hit Me Baby One More Time. Britney Spears.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was we didn't pass on that. We didn't pass on that. But Simon wanted it for us. He heard a demo version of it. And he offered Max, you know, mega sports cars, everything. I want that song for the boys. I want that song for the boys. And he's like, I'm really sorry. It's already signed, sealed, delivered. And not just that. He's like, well, who's doing it? Who's doing it? You know, the boys are selling millions and they're doing really well. He said, actually, Simon, we're giving it to this unknown, girl that's never sold a record. It's her first single. She's she's just this new artist called Britney Spears. He was like, what? Why would you do that?
Oh man.
Obviously he knew what he was doing, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, because it you know, obviously was such a huge success for her. And who could imagine anybody else doing that song now? Originally, it's hers. I mean, she really made it her own. So
yeah, it's hard to envision you guys doing it, particularly when I think of the music video with the school outfits and everything.
I don't think it would have quite had the same appeal.
That's awesome. So in 2005, I got to perform with Queen at the Brit Awards and got to do a little bit of a tour through that time. Can you talk about what that tour experience was like? And also, for the record, chickenpox sucks, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's take the Brits. Anything with Queen was just awesome. I mean, it was awesome. It was so cool. You know, like my parents owned a pub. So you could say I was brought up in a pub. And obviously there was a jukebox playing all the time, and Queen were, you know, just a staple the whole time on it. So I was so familiar with, obviously, you know, their work and growing up. And when they said, oh, like, you're going to be working with Queen, and by the way, we want you to do the lead, I actually must admit, I was like, what? Like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, that's quite full on. And, opening the Brits was just such a privilege. It was just such a privilege to just to be stood with Brian May before going on stage and going, yeah, you know, rock on, Bri. Yeah, rock on, Rich, you know, and just going out and doing it to you know, millions or billions of people and on TV is just crazy, especially when you're 18, you know, you're 18. Yeah, it was mad, absolutely mad. My favorite Queen memory, though, wasn't, it was at Roger Taylor's house, and we were rehearsing and we decided to have a break and the mic was still up. Some of the guys went off for a drink and stuff. And I just sang the beginning of Jimi Hendrix, Hey Joe, down the mic. And Brian just, ears pricked up and he, now, 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 now. Roger picked up the sticks. Da, 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 and it was just the best memory I'll ever have of just jamming off the cuff with such an iconic rock band. Like, it was just awesome. Amazing. So cool.
That's yeah, so cool.
And what was the thing? You were mentioning chicken pox, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to say for the record, it sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it sucks. I mean, my daughter's had it and, you know, she was a little bit ill. She was okay. But as an adult, it's not so fun. And I came down with it on tour in New Zealand. I got really, really ill. So I didn't go to the South American leg of the tour. And, I just had to go home and chill for a bit. But yeah, not cool. But it happens. Yeah. Hey, at least there wasn't a pandemic.
Okay. That is it for the night music-wise. Ooh, It's Kind of Crazy by Soul Decision. Before that, I'll Be There by the Jackson 5. Another good night of music and fun. But now we're at the end of the show. And I think we both know what that means.
It's time for the Douchebag of the Week.
The Douchebag of the Week, where we pay tribute to the douchiest of the douche. Shane, who do you got?
So this week, it falls slightly in like the questionable statute of limitations, because I think this story came out literally the day we were shooting our show last week, but I really wanted to go in on LeBron James. Mm-hmm. So this week I'm going with registered nurse Joanna Overholt. So,
oh, good Lord.
For those of you who not paid attention to Twitter, you may have seen this. She was up again talking to Ohio legislators about the effects of the coronavirus vaccine. And registered nurse is like a loose term because, like, I mean, she may have the credentials, but I'm quite questioning her treatment methods after this tactic. She claimed that by injecting herself with the COVID vaccine that she was supposedly forced to do for her profession, she now has magnetic tendencies.
Oh my God.
So in this display, she decided to try to use a key, like a regular household or car key, to stick to her to prove this. Mm-hmm. So the first time she does it, she puts it in her cleavage area, you know, as it slopes down a little bit, an area where it can sit kind of favorably.
Right.
I mean, I don't even have that much cleavage, but I could get something to stick to me like that, especially right. If I'm spitting lies in front of some legislators. I'm probably sweating a little bit, so there's probably a little bit to catch on to. But then she goes to then put it on her neck to also demonstrate it, and it just doesn't stick. And she gets a little frazzled as she does it. So check out Joanna Overholt on Twitter. Hilarious. Supposedly, give me all the vaccines, give me all the magnetism. I want to be Magneto.
Exactly. You know what's kind of funny is when I was in college, I remember taking keys and sticking them to my face. Like, it started out just kind of as a silly, I wonder if this will work. And then it did. So then I was like, oh, I can do two keys and three keys and four keys. Now, obviously, that was 2002. So that's almost 20 years before the COVID-19 vaccine existed. So either somebody traveled back in time and injected me with the vaccine for a virus that we didn't know was going to exist yet, or the more likely explanation, this woman is just an idiot.
You can get anything to stick to you, especially if you lick it too. I mean, that's right. How we got in Clemson games, right? The lick and stick.
Yeah, that's why stuff would stick to my head is because, like, if I'm sweaty, easy enough. Like, it's a grossness thing more than anything else. But oh my god,
it's a moisture thing. It makes it happen. Like, I mean, if you're spewing out some bullshit to some legislators, you're probably perspirating a little bit.
Yeah,
easier to stick.
Oh my god, people will believe anything.
But she
nowadays.
Couldn't even make it work on her neck when she was trying to make the point. That was the better part. It's like, oh, let me put in my cleavage, this'll work, then bop.
You know what I bet? She probably made some explanation later that Bill Gates turned off the magnetism in the 5G chip to make her look stupid.
Oh yeah, yeah. The metal detector like kind of demagnetized it.
My god. Okay. So this was not planned, but I'm also going to stay on the COVID vaccine angle this week with my douchebag of the week, which is Buffalo Bills receiver Cole Beasley. So a little bit of a context for folks. So the NFL and the NFL Players Association, I think it was yesterday, released their guidelines for training camp as far as what vaccinated players would be able to do versus unvaccinated players at training camp. So vaccinated players basically have free run of place. They can hang out like they used to pre-COVID. They can eat in the cafeteria like they used to. They can go to the sauna room like they used to be able to do. They don't have to wear masks in the meeting rooms and that sort of thing. If they get exposed to COVID, they don't have to quarantine. Whereas the unvaccinated players, basically it's the same restrictions as last year because if you're not vaccinated, you still have the risk of getting it. You still have the risk of spreading it. So they're trying to minimize that. Now, why is that? Because if games get delayed or if there's outbreaks and they have to reduce fan capacity and that sort of thing, that's going to cost them more money. Keep in mind, last year, the NFL lost a crap ton of money because of no fans, essentially. So the NFL and the NFLPA is looking at this from a business perspective. And plus, there's a competitive advantage to it. If you don't have to take all these precautions and you don't have to quarantine after getting exposed if you're vaccinated, like, that puts you at an advantage. So they're trying to entice players to get vaccinated, not because of a public health piece necessarily, but because they don't want to lose any more money. So the NFL and the PA got on the same page with that, and they released their guidelines, but several players took issue with it. But Cole Beasley, oh boy, he spoke out today. He called the NFL Players Association a joke. He said it's not for the players. And he went on to say, "This is crazy. Did we vote on this? I stay in the hotel. We still have meetings. We will all be together. Vaccinated players can go out of the hotel and bring back COVID to where I'm at. So what does it matter if I stay in the hotel now? 100% immune with vaccination? No." Okay, so, you know, whatever to that. This is the part that just had me roll in my eyes and also trying to understand what the heck he was saying. He says, and this is a quote, "Everyone gives me the 98% of people who are vaccinated don't get COVID again. The odds of me getting in the NFL and playing for 10 years are lower than that, and I'm here. So what are we really talking about?" I don't know. I don't know what we're talking about, Cole, because that makes no effing sense.
He doesn't either.
Right. Is his argument that because I made it to the NFL and have lasted for 10 years against the odds that I can't get COVID? I don't get it.
It's a tough one to defend. I mean, like, I could understand if you were that strong-willed against something that you would speak up for it, but I don't know. Knowing my platform, what's going to happen, I would be a little bit more maybe educated on my response, and I don't know.
And it's like,
whatever.
Right, you don't, again, they're not requiring him to get vaccinated, so he can choose not to, and he has to take the same precautions as last year.
I mean, he is a slot receiver. The dude does take a lot of blows to the head, so, you know,
That's fair. What was frustrating is he almost got it later on. He says, "I completely understand why the NFL is doing this. It gives them back the freedom to make the most money possible again if everyone is vaccinated. But will anyone fight for the players or nah?" Yes, because it is about making the most money possible, which means, and you know, we can get into arguments all day about if the collective bargaining agreement is lopsided, whatever, but the more money the NFL makes, the more money the players make, which is the whole point of this.
Right, right. And that's the thing. It's like, I mean, the whole situation's messed up. We can talk about is it fair? I mean, owners have very limited risk. They get to say everything that they want to do. Players, some may be overpaid, some are underpaid. The fact that they don't get fully guaranteed contracts and they're playing the most dangerous sport. We can talk for days about the semantics of the bullshit that's going on and the way that people are treated. And like, I'm pro player in most of these scenarios, but like, this one just doesn't seem like this is the sword I want to die on. Like, you all want to make a ton of money. The way to do that is to make games and have the most amount of people that are there, so we need to take the precautions. They're not the only league that's, like, doing stuff like this. So
right.
It's like, it's, I don't know. I don't get it. Like, end of the day, the guy's making more money than I will ever see in my life.
Mm-hmm.
For, I don't want to say limited amount of work. I mean, his scope of every day that he has to do and this time frame of things he has to do is a little different than what we do on a traditional 9-to-5 all the time. But the guy, he is putting he's doing a lot more danger than I am, so I get that side of it. But you make money by being on the field. You should do everything in your power to make sure that you're able to be on that field.
Right. His earning window is extremely limited because of football. So the goal is to make as much money as possible in the shortest amount of time possible. And right now, the best way to do that is to get in a place where they're maximizing their revenue by having all the fans, by being able to play all the games on time. And again, like,
Well, it's safer for him to not have to play like a Wednesday game or a Tuesday game, exactly. Whatever he had to do, and then go again to play like 4 days later. Like, your body needs that time to rest. Like, do everything in your power to have it keep the schedule that it is.
Exactly.
You already added another game.
Right. It's just, again, you know, it's not so much the merits of his about whether or not he should get vaccinated, but more so this weird, I shouldn't have to be vaccinated because I play football for 10 years and that was less likely than getting COVID. Like, what? It's one of those, like, did he just get hit in the head before sending those tweets out? Because it makes no sense. But, you know, if you want to make your money right now, you got to do things a certain way. And if you don't want to make the money, that's fine. But you can't have it both
Sit
ways
out.
Right now.
You have that choice.
Yeah. Take the money you have and go. It doesn't... It's just some weird arguments now, but we'll leave it at that. We're well past our time. So, again, make sure to go to veryboybandsummer.com right now to vote. Voting is open. Voting is new. Vote or die. We will come get you. So, with that, I'm Mike and he is Shane. Have a good week. Have a good weekend. And we will see you next week.
Be well, friends.